Meharry smelled trouble before she got anywhere near the weapons lockers. An earthy, organic stench that had no business wafting out of the air vents. She knew it well, and proceeded with even more caution thereafter, taking a roundabout route she hoped no one would expect. She had her personal weapons, just as Arkady had. Hers were the little knives in their sheaths, and the very small but very deadly little automatic tucked into her boot. If Serkan thought she was going to take Meharry by surprise... She paused, listening again. Really, she didn't know why everyone didn't carry a pocket scanner. Carefully, she slid out the fiber-optic probe and eased its tip to the corner, then checked her back trail and overhead before putting her eye to the eyepiece. Bodies sprawled all over the deck near the weapons lockers, and on his feet, cursing softly as he applied pressure bandages as fast as he could, Petrus.
Why didn't he report?
Then she saw the ruin of the nearby pickups. He must have found this and simply set to work to save those he could. She retrieved the visual probe and hoped she was right in her guess, because if Petrus was the problem, they were in a mess far too bad for belief.
Petrus!
Methlin, tell Harris to get the rest of the medic team down here fast. Lady Cecilia's still alive.
You all right?
I got here late.
Meharry backed up to the first undamaged intercom.
What?
Get the medics down here. I'm gonna help unless Arkady needs me.
No, we only have three ships after us now. I've put Oblo with Arkady.
Meharry walked around the corner, still wary, and found a situation that didn't fit her theories. Petrus shoved rolls of bandaging material at her.
Here, see what you can do with those three. They're alive. The clone's dead, and so is Skodarin, and I think Hydar and Sirkin. But now that you're here, I can look.
Meharry continued Petrus's work, glancing at Lady Cecilia, clearly alive, though bloody, but lying against the wreck of her chair as if stunned. She took a quick look at Skodarin, startled to see her wearing personal armor. It hadn't saved her from a shot to the head.
Damn, Sirkin, I didn't think she could shoot that straight.
She didn't. I did. It wasn't Sirkin after all.
What? Skodarin?
Yep. The dumbass wasted time explaining it to them. If she'd gone on a little longer, I'd have nailed her without the rest of this. But she started to shoot Sirkin, and the clone jumped her, and that's when I arrived.
I didn't know you could shoot that straight.
Whatever else she might have said was cut off by the arrival of the others in Lady Cecilia's medical team. On the bridge, Harris heard Meharry's first report with disbelief. She located the rest of Cecilia's staff and sent them down. Meanwhile, the compassionate hand ships continued to close, but did not attack.
What are they waiting for? Do they think we can take them?
Nice thought. Let's hope they think so until Meharry gets back up here. Maybe they think we'll surrender if they give us time.
There's something coming into the system. Something big.
Guar's fingers flew over the board, trying one screen after another.
I wish we'd gotten that VX-84 you found, Oblo.
She said nothing stolen.
I said nothing illegal, but you didn't pay any attention to that. What stopped you this time?
Guy wanted more than I wanted to pay. I don't like messy jobs. Let him take care of his own family problems.
Harris tried to figure out what the compassionate hand commanders were doing. The yacht was running flat out on a course that the gas giant and its satellites would curve into a blunt parabola. They had emerged from jump too close to its mast to do anything else. The two larger CH vessels paralleled it, slowly catching up. The third had been unable to gain on them. Meharry appeared at the bridge entrance, bloodstained.
Captain, it wasn't Sirkin after all. It was Skodarin. Sirkin's been shot. She's alive.
Intruder, you have been warned. Under the justice of the benignity of the compassionate hand.
Now, Arkady.
Stand convicted of trespass, refusal to heave to, and other serious
weapons
crimes
away,
for which capital punishment is the customary sentence. Protests will be registered with your government and indemnity demanded for your crimes. By the power vested in me as an
Targeting.
Officer of the benignity
Incoming
of the
live warheads,
hand,
much faster than before.
I think those little warts were just testing us before.
Get off my board, Oblo, and let me at them!
Spoil sport.
They switched places smoothly, and Oblo returned to his own console. His brows rose.
My, my. Look who's come calling.
Unless it's half a battle group, I don't care.
Harris kept her eyes fixed on the main screen. The incoming missiles jinked, but relocked on the yacht. Their own seemed to be going in the right direction, but... No. She lost them in the static from the incomings, which had just blown up far short of their target.
If they thought all we had was ECM to unlock targeting, they're gonna be annoyed.
Wasn't a bad guess, Captain. Although it's only one cruiser.
Our side?
By the beacon, yes. By behavior, We'll have to see when their scan's cleared. It says it's Levati again.
Levati's cruiser had arrived with far more residual velocity than the yacht, and more mass as well. It appeared on the scan with its icon already trailing a skewed angle. Levati, it seemed, meant to be in on the action. The compassionate hand ships, on the other hand, made it clear what they thought of his interference. One engaged him at once with a storm of missiles. The other changed course, angling across the yacht's path to come between the yacht and Levati's cruiser. Harris reached out for the tight-beam transmitter they weren't supposed to have.
Oblo, get me a lock on Levati's ship.
Why? He's got Kutsudis on scan one. You'd think he'd miss anything?
No, but he's being shot at. Give him a break, all right?
Right.
Oblo nodded when he had the lock. Harris flipped the transmitter switch.
Levati, third bogey on your tail. Watch it.
As if he'd been waiting for her signal, her own tight-beam receiver lit.
We've got to stop meeting like this, Harris. You got bad data at Rotterdam. You've got a traitor aboard. That's why we're here.
Not for long if you don't watch it.
Harris kept eyeing her own scans. But Levati, in a fully crewed cruiser, had more eyes to watch than she did, and the first attacking missiles died well outside his screens. She wondered what his orders were, if he had any, because his counterattack was already launched. She had never thought of him as a possible rogue commander, but here he was, deep in someone else's territory and opening fire.
Something else I wish we had. Screens that would stop something bigger than a juice can.
Wouldn't fit, remember?
Both compassionate hand cruisers now engaged Levati's ship. Harris began to hope everyone would forget about her. Given enough time, they could continue their swing around the gas giant, reach a safe jump distance, and disappear. That would leave Levati in a fix, but he seemed to be doing very well. His first salvo sparkled all over one of the enemy screens, an indication that he had almost breached them. And if he had come to rescue them, give them a chance, then the smart thing to do was sneak away and let the professionals do the fighting. She hated to do it, but the yacht was no warship.
Captain, medical report. We've got 3 dead, 2 critical, 3 serious.
Lady Cecilia?
Alive, conscious, in pain, but she'll make it. Skoderin, Mr. Smith, and Haidar are dead. Sirkin and Lady Cecilia's communications therapist are critical. We may lose them without a trauma team, which we don't have. 3 others of her medical team are in serious condition. Lady Cecilia's physician is unhurt, but trauma's not her specialty. She's a geriatric neurologist, and she says she's out of her depth with open chest and belly wounds.
Harris fought down her rage and grief. That wouldn't help. She felt her mind slide into the familiar pattern, a cool detachment that allowed rapid processing of all alternatives, uncluttered by irrelevant worries. They had dying passengers. They needed medical care. The nearest source of trauma care was, right over there, being shot at. And of course, it was the best excuse for getting involved, although she pushed back a niggling suspicion that that carried more weight than it should.
Thank you, Petrus. We'll do what we can. Levati's out there now, and he has a trauma center, assuming we win the battle.
Right. I'm going back down to check the damage. Stray shots hit some circuits down there, and now that we've no live environmental specialists...
This was not the time to tell him that one of the things she loved about him was his ability to stick to priorities.
I think...
Her thoughtful tone made Oblo and Mahari give her a quick look.
I think those compassionate handships have decided we're not worth bothering with. They seem to think the important thing is keeping Levati away from us.
Yes, Captain?
Well, they got between us. All of them.
The trailing third ship had risked a micro-jump to catch up to the battle. Dangerous, but it had worked.
And nobody's targeting us. Now, speaking as a tactical commander, don't you think that was stupid?
They all grinned.
I think they just put themselves in our trap. Oblo, how much maneuvering scope do we have?
Not much, but we can close the range on them if you want. It'll cost us another half hour to a safe jump range.
Jump won't get our wounded to care any sooner. But Levati's got a perfectly good sickbay over there if somebody doesn't blow a hole in it. Let's make sure no one does.
The compassionate hand ships clearly thought they had an enemy cruiser locked in their box. For all that Harris's scans could detect, they paid no attention to the yacht's change of course that brought her swinging out toward the warships. They were too busy pounding at Levati's ship and dealing with his salvos. If the yacht had not existed, it would have been a well-conducted attack, almost textbook quality.
Of course, when we do fire, they'll be all over us.
If they don't notice us another minute or so, we'll be close enough to blow one of them completely.
One of them, but the other two will have to acquire us, get firing solutions. We have time.
The Lavati's attack breached one of the enemy ship's shields, but it neither broke up nor pulled away. Major damage was Oblo's guess, but he couldn't understand the compassionate hand transmissions, which were in a foreign language and encoded anyway.
I think they rolled her, though, to put the damaged shields on this side.
That's your prime target, Janice. You know wounded CH commanders, they get suicidal. How much longer?
At your word, Captain.
Now.
The yacht shivered as Janice sent a full third of its ballistic capability down the port tubes and out toward the wounded CH ship. Oblo rolled the yacht on its axis to present the remaining loaded tubes to the fight. Seconds ticked by. Then the yacht's missiles slammed into the enemy cruiser, one after another, exploding in a carefully timed sequence. The external visual darkened, protecting its lenses from the flare of light as the cruiser itself ruptured and blew apart. Harris spent no time watching.
Oblo, maximum deceleration, now.
He gave her a startled look, but complied. The yacht could not withstand extreme maneuvers, but a course change like this might be enough to surprise the enemy and avoid any late-arriving missiles that Lavati had sent at that cruiser. Unfortunately, it would blur their scans just when they needed them clear.
There they go. Lavati did have a couple on the way.
I would hate to get blown away by my rescuer.
I have a lock on the second cruiser. Permission?
Do it.
Again, the yacht shivered. She wasn't built for this kind of stress. But the salvo was away. Harris tried to calculate what that did to their gross mass and what that meant to maneuvering capability, but at the moment, the figures wouldn't come. The scans had adjusted to their new settings. She could see that the other two compassionate hand ships were changing course, the trailing ones swinging wide now, losing range to take up a safer position, where Harris could not attack it without risking Lavati in the middle or performing maneuvers beyond the yacht's capacity. The nearer enemy ship and Lavati continued to exchange fire.
That nearer ship's trying to get a lock on us, Captain.
With their course change, it took seconds longer for their salvo to reach the enemy, and this time someone had been watching. Harris felt a grudging admiration for a crew that could react that quickly to a new menace. Half their missiles detonated outside the ship's shield, and the rest splashed harmlessly against it. Return fire already on its way. But Mahari and Janice were able to break the target lock of some and the timers of the rest. This time it was Livadi's crew that exploited an opening, or perhaps defending against Harris's attack had taken just that necessary bit from the shields, for Livadi's salvo blew through, and the enemy cruiser lost power and control. It tumbled end over end, shedding pieces of itself to clutter the scans.
And that leaves number three.
And their reinforcements. It may take them a while to get here, but they'll arrive.
The third ship now fell farther back. Harris didn't trust that, but she didn't have the resources to pursue it. Instead, she changed course again, returning to maximum forward acceleration, and put a tight beam on Lavati's ship.
We have critical casualties. Can you accept 5 patients?
How's your ship?
Not from that. From a fight inside. That traitor you mentioned.
I see. Frankly, I don't want to risk docking with you while that other warship's untouched. I can send over a pinnace with a trauma team. Would that help?
Yes.
It would help, but would it be enough? Harris could see Lavati's point. If she'd commanded the cruiser, she wouldn't want to have some civilian ship nuzzled up close when an attack started.
But we have no supplies for trauma, and just empty space. Send what you can.
Right away. Stand by for recognition signals.
Why not Fleet Blue? I already know that.
Of course. Sorry. Fleet Blue it is.
The pinnace should be too small to attract fire from that third ship. Harris could barely find it on scans herself, and she was much closer. Time passed. Harris could not leave the bridge, not with a hostile ship out there. She sent Petrus to help the pinnace mate with their docking access tube and reported its safe arrival to Lavati. Was it too late for their casualties? She heard nothing from the medical team. Of course, they would be busy. Better not to interrupt. Another hour and another. The third compassionate hand ship continued to fall behind, though it did not turn away. Petrus arrived on the bridge, as blood-streaked as Mahari.
Sorry it took so long. I wanted to patch up a few things. Near as I can tell, nothing really important got holes in it. I'll have to read up on the systems, though.
And our casualties?
Can't tell yet. They brought 2 trauma surgeons and their teams. Sirkin's the worst, but they're still working on her. Said if they could stabilize them, a regen tank would do the rest. But there's no way to load a regen tank on a pinnace.
Lady Cecilia?
He's spitting mad, near as I can tell. A fragment got her synthesizer and her communications specialist died, so she's having a hard time making herself understood. She got a shallow flesh wound, probably the same fragment that ruined her synthesizer, but she's fine. Wants to see you when you've time, but I explained you wouldn't.
Where is she?
In the thick of things. Insists she wants to stay with Sirkin, and the med teams are too busy to carry her out. Her hover chair got a solid hit, and it's down too.
Have you found out any more about Skoderin?
Only what I heard as I came on the scene. She was a deep agent for the Compassionate Hand before she joined up, and a relative of that mole who died on your first voyage.
And perhaps that guard who died on Cerealis, the one who shot young George. Ickland, that was the name. Levati claims we got bad chart data from Rotterdam Station, which is why we ended up here. And Skoderin is the one who fetched the charts from the station master.
And altered them on the way? Could be done. She could have been messing up Sirkin's work, too. We trusted her, old shipmate as she was.
Lady Cecilia tried to tell me. Said it wasn't Sirkin, but I wouldn't believe her. And now three people are dead.
One of whom should be.
Petrus reached out a hand and drew it back. Harris saw the movement and wished they were not on the bridge in a hostile situation. She needed that touch, some comfort in a bad time.
If it's any comfort, not one of us caught on. We all made the same mistake.
The others on the bridge nodded.
I had liked Sirkin a lot, so I cut her more slack than the rest of you. Kept thinking it was delayed grief reaction or something. But it never occurred to me it could be sabotage. Just like you and Petrus, I trusted Skoderin just because she'd serve with us, even though I knew some of that crew were Lupescu's agents. I didn't know her before, but she was military. She'd been a shipmate, and that was enough. And that was flat-out stupid.
That may be, but I'm still at fault.
Oblo turned around and grinned.
That's true. The great Captain Serrano makes mistakes. What a surprise. We thought you were perfect.
I didn't. I always said her nose was too short.
All right, all right. I get your point. We're all old friends and we all made a mistake. And we go on from here, sadder but wiser. If Sirkin dies, a lot sadder.
I'd bet on her to make it. With Lady Cecilia sitting there radiating mother hen protectiveness, she doesn't need speech to convey how much she cares.
Harris's tight beam receiver lit again, and she picked up the headset.
Harris, how close are you to your critical jump distance?
Harris looked at Oblo and put her hand over the mouthpiece.
Jump? How long?
He looked at his plot and punched in some corrections, then looked again.
Less than an hour, Captain. Looks like we might make it. 43 minutes and a handful of seconds, to be more precise.
A little more than 43 minutes.
Good. If nothing else lights up, I'll expect you to jump out of here as soon as you can. Take my medical teams with you for now, and I'll cover your back trail. Don't tell me your destination, but do you need any coordinates for a safe jump out?
Yes. I'd like to clear the Benignity with one jump. Possible?
Yes. Here.
He beamed over a string of numbers that Harris passed to Oblo.
Fine. Now, I am authorized to say that the situation we both know about is extremely unstable. The Council would like to speak with Lady Cecilia at her earliest convenience. Lord Thornbuckle has filed a question with the Grand Table. The Crown asks if you can transport a certain Mr. Smith and his friend back home.
Harris's mind buzzed with the implications of Levati's report.
Medical intervention must come first.
Of course, I understand. I would urge extreme caution and suggest that we rendezvous for your return so that we can provide an escort. You might also consider rearming...
Thank you. Give me a contact coordinate.
Another string of numbers followed. Then Levati broke contact. Minute by minute, the yacht edged closer to safety. Harris kept expecting something else to go wrong. Another compassionate hand ship appearing in their path. Another crisis aboard. But nothing interrupted them. And at last, Oblo was able to put them back into jump mode. Levati's trauma teams had turned two of the guest suites into sick bays. In one, Sirkin lay attached to more tubes and wires than she had arms and legs. Beside her on a stretcher, Lady Cecilia lay on her side holding Sirkin's hand. Across that room, two of the less critically wounded were dozing, their bandages making humps and lumps under the bedclothes. Her employer looked only slightly better than Sirkin, pale and exhausted.
Lady Cecilia...
I told you.
You did, and you were right. I'm very sorry. I should have listened to you.
If I could talk, damn it.
I know. You have so much to say. And your people died, too. Must be much worse for you.
Don't we all die?
So did I for a while there. Let me tell you what happened.
Harris outlined the events and then waited for Cecilia's response.
Damn lucky.
It's not over. We have to get you all to Guerny. We have to get you home safely and survive whatever's going on. And find out who's doing it and why.
Lorenza Torinos. Remember?
I will. But you're going to be able to give your own testimony.
The Guerny Republic's customs were as quick and capable with incoming medical emergencies as with casual trade. Harris requested the fastest possible incoming lane. Customs sent an escort alongside to do a close-up scan.
You've been here before. Your references are good. You're cleared with the usual warnings.
Thanks. What about a medical shuttle from the station?
We'll arrange it. Actually, trauma cases may not need to go downside. We have major medical available on all stations. We normally handle everything on station, unless that facility is full. Saves transport stress and time.
Harris was impressed all over again. It made sense, but in Familia's space, most stations transferred serious trauma down to the planet. She had heard it explained as being more cost-effective, but the Guernesi were supposed to be the galaxy experts on cost-effectiveness. When they arrived at the station, medical teams awaited them dockside, and the casualties were transferred quickly to the station trauma center. Cecilia would be shuttled down to the neuromedical center later. She had agreed to have Mahari and Janice escort her there. Harris would stay up at the station until Sirkin was out of danger. As soon as she had arranged a private shuttle for Cecilia, her surviving attendants, and her bodyguards, Harris went to the station hospital.
Just barely in time. That artificial blood substitute saved her, but you really pushed its limits. Should have been using exterior gas exchange as well. I'm surprised your doctors didn't.
Harris decided not to explain the limits of transferring medical equipment between ships in deep space while in hostile territory.
When they finished packing up on our ship, maybe they'll talk to you about it.
And we have a newer substitute with a better performance you might want to consider stocking. A license to manufacture would be available through our medical technology exports office.
When can I see our casualties? Especially Brigdis Sirkin.
The two worst. Not for at least 2 days. They'll have 2 long sessions in regen, but they need transfusions first. The other 3 will be out of the regen tanks in another 6 hours, so any time after that...
Harris went back to the yacht and found that Lavati's teams had scoured the areas they'd been using. These now smelled like any sickbay. But one of them stopped her in the midst of her thanks.
What's this, Captain?
The woman held up an unmistakable cockroach egg case. Harris had a sudden vision of being detained forever on a charge of importing illegal biologicals.
An egg case. We had to evacuate Lady Cecilia from Rotterdam in haste. We had no time for proper disinfection procedures, and she was living at a training stable.
I presume you disinfected the ship.
Oh, yes. I can't be sure we got them all, but we'll do it again. It was on my schedule, but then we came out of jump in the wrong place.
Oh, of course. I'd forgotten about Lady Cecilia's luggage, and from a stable yard. It's just that contamination from vermin is a serious problem.
You don't know the half of it.
At least they'd found an egg case and not one of the albino cockroaches. She wasn't about to tell this starchy person about the cockroach colonies down in Ponix.
They were telling me in the hospital here that they have a newer, more efficient oxygen exchange fluid for blood replacement.
Really? Expensive?
They said something about a license to manufacture. If you found something the fleet wanted to use, it might make your time here worthwhile.
Certainly. Thanks. I'll just get the team together.
Sirkin was asleep, curled on her side like a child, when Harris arrived. She looked perfectly healthy, with color in her cheeks again, and no obvious bandages. Harris had made herself visit Cecilia's attendant first, though she didn't know the man at all. Now she sat beside the bed and waited for Sirkin to wake. Once an attendant peeked in, jotted down some numbers off the monitor above the bed, smiled at Harris, and went back out. Harris dozed off, waking when Sirkin stirred.
Captain!
You're almost recovered, they tell me. I'm sorry. All of us are. We should have trusted you.
I don't know. I didn't trust myself. and I don't know how she could. She had been on your ship.
Don't worry about her. Let's talk about you. You know Lady Cecilia stood by you all along.
Yes. She came to my cabin, and she said she knew it wasn't my fault.
She'd like you to stay with us, Brig, though no one will blame you if you don't. We all want you to.
You're sure?
Of course. I can make stupid mistakes, but I can also admit them. It wasn't your fault. You did good work and someone else messed it up. You'll do good work again. It's more a matter of whether you trust us, if you're sure of us.
I want to. I like you.
That almost childlike admission struck Harris to the core. She could have cried.
You were all so... so good when Amelie died. Even Lord Thornbuckle's daughter.
Even? Brune's a remarkable young woman, if she did happen to be born rich. She liked you. I dare say if she'd been aboard, she'd have chewed my ears about you and made a dent in my suspicions.
I really like her.
Sirkin flushed. Harris mentally rolled her eyes.
Youngsters.
Meharry had told her privately that Brigdis and Brune were likely to go overboard. Clearly Sirkin had. But they'd have to work that out. She never interfered in her crew members' romantic entanglements unless it endangered the ship. This wouldn't.
One of us will be by every shift until you're out of here. You're under guard because we still don't know how much trouble we face, but you can call the ship any time you're concerned. I've got to go down and see how Lady Cecilia's coming along.
Thank you.
Completely awake now, Sirkin had begun to regain that sparkle she'd had at first. Harris wondered again if she would be able to afford rejuvenation someday, and what her employer would think about it. Cecilia had had reports sent up to Harris, encouraging reports on the whole. Harris didn't entirely understand the medical terminology. Levati's medical teams might have helped interpret, except that they were spending all their time in the station hospital. The receptionist recognized her now and gave her Cecilia's room number. When she came out of the lift on that floor, Meharry was stretched out in the visitor's lounge.
How is she?
Better you should see her. We're taking alternate shifts now. Arcadi's in the visitor's hostel.
Sirkin's doing well. She's staying with us.
She's a sweet kid. Almost too sweet for her own good. I think that's what made me so mad. I liked her so much, and she was so good, and then... you know, if Skoda had been anything but a bland nothing, I'd have figured it out.
So we look out for bland nothings. See you after I talk to Lady Cecilia.
You'll be surprised.
Harris worried all the way down the corridor. The bright floral prints and soft carpet did nothing to reassure her. She found the number.
Come in.
Perhaps a nurse was with her. Even more worried, Harris pushed the door open. The large room opened onto an atrium filled with flowering plants and ferns. Across an expanse of apricot carpet, a woman in a green silk robe stood by a table set for a meal. The woman couldn't be Cecilia, Harris realized after a startled glance. She was only in her 40s, and although she was tall and lean, she had not a single strand of gray in her red hair. It must be the wrong room. Harris turned to look at the room number. Harris felt that chuckle as a blow to the heart.
It is... but how?
Do come in and shut the door. That's better. Cecilia gestured to the chairs by the table.
Here, sit down. You look as if you'd seen a ghost.
I'm not sure.
Cecilia sat down herself and grinned at Harris.
Vanity has its uses, you know. I decided to take advantage of it.
But you said you'd never go through rejuve.
If you'd asked me, I'd have said I'd never be poisoned by that wretched Lorenza. Here, have a cup of broth. They have quite good food here.
Harris opened her mouth to say she wasn't hungry and realized she was. And her employer was looking at her with a wicked gleam in her eyes.
It was vanity that saved me, actually. And now I'll have to confess it, and you'll laugh at me.
No, I won't. I'm too glad to have you alive. And by the way, thanks for saving us from that mess on the ship.
I only wish I'd done a better job of it. But let me tell you, you remember how smug I was about taking no medicines and refusing rejuve?
Yes.
Well, I was lying. to everyone and to myself. There was this preparation, herbal stuff. Lots of women used it, and none of us considered it medicinal exactly, or cosmetic exactly. I thought of it as a kind of tonic. Of course, I knew my skin was smoother and I felt better, but I didn't consider what it really was.
And it was...
I was so arrogant about drugs, it never occurred to me that many of them come from herbs, plants, that I was taking quite a solid dose of bioactive chemicals that functioned in some ways like the rejuvenation chemicals. So there I was, smugly certain that I wasn't like those others, the ones I despised, and in fact I was. I must have known. I didn't tell anyone I took it, not even my maid, and certainly not anyone medical. My doctor just thought I had naturally good genes, which I do, but not that good. So when Lorenza poisoned me, she used a dose based on my supposed drug-free biochemistry. It worked, but the damage was not as complete. It required more maintenance drugs than expected, which meant that when I came off the maintenance drugs, I could recover with therapy. And it also meant that a complete rejuvenation treatment would reverse all the damage.
And so you thought if vanity had saved you so far, you'd go the whole way?
That, and the fact that nothing but rejuve would give me natural eyesight again. That visual prosthesis is good enough for walking around without bumping into things, but it doesn't begin to substitute for real sight. The colors, the textures. Oh, Harris, I thought I would go mad, locked away in that darkness, motionless, helpless.
Harris reached to touch her hand.
Cecilia, m'lady, I don't know how you did it, but it took incredible courage.
Oh, no, not courage. Pig-headed stubbornness. I simply would not give up. And the advantage of being over 80 when something like that happens is that you have a lot of experience to remember. Not enough. It's never enough, but a lot.
Do you think this person, Lorenza, intended to kill you?
Oh, no. She intended exactly what happened. She used to come visit, you know, and sit by my bed and whisper into my ear. I did it, she would say. She never gave her name, and at that time I couldn't figure out who it was. But it told me that someone had done it, and that helped. It gave me a target. I didn't remember, the drug I was given was supposed to knock out short-term memory for the event, until one day, after a long ride in therapy. I was suddenly there, where it happened, in Berenice's drawing room, with Lorenza handing me a glass of fruit juice.
Cecilia stared at the ferns and flowers.
She said that once, too. You'll never ride again, Cecilia. You'll never feel the wind in your face, never smell the flowers.
Oh, God, she must be a terrible woman.
She's the main reason I refused rejuvenation so long. We knew each other as children, and she began to have rejuve early and often. She was obsessed with her appearance. And I admit she's a beauty, and always was. But the last time I saw her, that smooth young skin and glossy hair and those ancient evil eyes, I didn't want to become that sort of person.
You couldn't.
Harris, I love your loyalty. But one thing I have learned in my long, eventful life is that anyone can change into anything. It takes only carelessness. My mistake was in confusing surface behaviors with the reasons behind them. It wasn't rejuve that made Lorenza what she is. What she is propelled her to that many rejuve procedures.
Still, you would never...
I hope not. Certainly nothing that cruel. But if you put Lorenza and me in the same room, I could kill her. You know I can kill.
Harris remembered Cecilia as she had been on Cerealis, when she shot the man who would have killed them both.
For cause, you could. Maybe even in vengeance. But you would not ever torment someone as she tormented you. That I'm sure of.
Good. So far, I feel no temptation that way, though I do have a strong urge to pull her blonde hair out by the roots.
So, When do we do just that?
I have one more round of neurological testing, and we want to be sure Sirkin's fully recovered.
She's younger than both of us, and recovers faster even without rejuve.
Good, then. Let's go back and, clean house, shall we?
There is the problem of the prince and his clone, or the clones and no prince. I accepted a mission from the king, as I explained to you.
The medical reports haven't straightened anything out?
Not really. All the tissue samples are identical. The clones believe, they told me, that they carry markers somewhere. But if these doctors can't find them, who can? As for the mental limitations, both these clones perform at normal levels on tests. Not as high as you'd expect from a registered embryo, but not as low as you'd expect from the prince, judging by what we saw on the way back from Cerealis.
What do the clones say now? Have you talked to them since you got back?
No. Have you?
Once, yes. Harris, I believe in my heart that the young man with us, Gerald A., as you called him, was the real prince. Their prime. I can't give you any reason that would make sense except an old woman's intuition. But remember how he and Ronnie both fell on that gas grenade?
If that was the prince.
It was. Everything that's happened since proves it. Neither the king, nor Lorenza, I believe, would go so far to protect a mere clone. If a clone fails, you get rid of it. My point is that along with Gerald's undeniable witlessness, he had great and generous gallantry. A meaner boy, stupid or bright, would not have done what he did. And when Skoterin threatened Sirkin, the moment the weapon swung toward her and away from me, Gerald A. did the same thing, in the same style. Generous, brave, and incredibly stupid. It provoked her to shoot. She might not have fired, and your Petrus might have killed her before anyone else got hurt. I think that was no clone. I think that was the prince himself.
But he had seemed more sensible at times, on the voyage with the others.
Think, Harris. If they were protecting him, if they knew his problem, they would shift about so that you could not be sure which one you spoke to. You'd have to ask. Couldn't that be it? Or perhaps all that time without the drug began to reverse the dullness.
But if that's true, then I've failed in the mission the king gave me. And what do we do with the clones?
I'll tell you what we don't do. We don't take them back to be discarded or killed by someone who would let his own son be ruined. Go talk to them. I told them what I thought. They didn't say much. They may to you. If they are the clones, and Jarl is dead, I will not let you take them on my ship. I don't want their ruin on my conscience.
Brunn had no intention of staying safely at home on the family's estates. They knew who had poisoned Lady Cecilia. They had figured out that the prince had also been slowly poisoned, and that the same method had been used on George for a short time. She and Ronnie and George were ready, the moment Buttons and Sarah arrived, to do battle with the minions of evil.
Whoa! You haven't thought it all out.
What's to think? The woman's a menace. She poisoned me, and then the prince, and then Lady Cecilia, and maybe a dozen others.
Why?
Why? I suppose, I guess, she likes poisoning people.
George, you're sounding about as intelligent as you did in your bad term. I have some missing links you'd better add to your chain of evidence. You mentioned Gerald being excited after visits from his brothers. Do you remember any more?
No.
Button stood and paced around the big library.
I do. It annoys all of you when I remind you I'm older, but it matters. You were in school with each other and Gerald. I was in school with Gerald's older brother, Nadril.
Who was killed in a duel? We know that.
Shut up, Ronnie. That's only part of it. Because I was his friend, I got to know the oldest. And don't bother to tell me you know Gerald had been accepted as successor by the Grand Council. That happened our last year in school. It was terribly exciting, and I got to attend with Nadril. But what I didn't know, because Gerard had said I was too stuffy and priggish and would spill the beans, was that Gerard had been groomed by some of the Familius to head a rebellion. Nodril knew, of course, and they dragged in Poyong Gerald, who worshipped his oldest brother. And it was Gerald who spilled the beans. To you, George.
George looked stunned, as if a rock had landed on his head.
I don't remember.
No, you wouldn't if they drugged you. I don't suppose you told anyone intentionally, but a certain innate cunning even then. But your father got wind of it, and he told the king. That assassination.
The king killed his own son?
No, nor ordered it. But one of the other familiars felt it had to be done. No one knew how far the plot had gone. The military was on alert for months. Nodrel was a problem, bitter and violent. I couldn't swear his duel was spontaneous.
And Gerald?
I would guess. I knew nothing about it until you told me this. I would guess the king wanted to be sure Gerald could not be the same kind of threat. Perhaps you, George, were the experimental subject, to prove the effects reversible. Then Gerald. I would like to believe the king meant no harm by it.
No harm? Poor Gerald, everyone thinking him a fool, and then Lady Cecilia being poisoned, and Sarah shot.
I didn't say there was no harm, only that he may not have intended it. If Lorenza was the king's arm in this, she may have done more than he knew.
Then it's Lorenza we have to stop. Now! What if she attacks my mother, thinking I might have said something to her, or George's parents?
Ronnie, we can't simply walk in and seize her. She's a Crown Minister's sister. Another complication, because I, for one, have no idea how much influence she has with him, or he with the king, for that matter. She's got a vote in the Grand Council in her own right. We have no legal standing.
Tell my father. I'll call him.
George, will you listen? Your father's already involved. So is ours. They filed a question. But none of us can grab Lorenza. We have no evidence. We need Lady Cecilia alive and well, her competency completely restored so that she can testify. We need the prince alive and well. And both of them are a long way away with a lot of things that can go wrong. Less will go wrong if we all act discreetly.
Then you didn't need my warning at all. You already knew about Lorenza, and I could have stayed with Lady Cecilia.
No, we didn't know about Lorenza. We knew it had to be someone, but we didn't know who. And that's important. We can't afford to lose anyone, so I want you all to agree to stay calm and follow orders.
Whose?
Mine for now, and Dad's when he gets here. George's father will tell him the same. Now, will you use sense and act like the adults you are?
Cecilia looked around the main lounge of her yacht with distaste.
I thought the lavender plush was bad, but I have to admit this is worse. Though I must say I'm glad to see it, really see it. Show me everything.
Harris glanced at Petrus, now their new environmental section head and assistant.
Everything, m'lady?
Every bit of it. I'll be thinking how lovely it will look when Space Enhance has finished with it.
She looked from one to the other of them.
Come on, what are you waiting for?
Well, we have this little problem.
Harris led her down the streaked grayish walls, wondering how Cecilia was going to react when she saw them. She opened the door to the Ponix section. Stacks of mesh cages held an ever-increasing number of cockroaches, filling the air in that compartment with an odd, heavy smell.
This.
What on... They're alive!
Yes, and I don't want you mentioning this to the medical teams either.
Where did they come from?
Space Enhance.
The decorators! They put cockroaches on my ship! On my ship!
We think they put cockroaches on everyone's ship. To eat the old wall covering and carpeting and the adhesives. Illegal, of course. A trade secret, no doubt. We thought we might need to deal in trade secrets, so we trapped the ones we found and let them breed.
Cecilia leaned forward to look at the nearest cage.
But what did they do with the cockroaches after they ate the stuff?
We think, mind, this is only our speculation, that they converted the cockroaches into a sort of organic slurry, which could then be extruded into fiber or other shapes to make carpets or wall coverings.
You mean they put ground-up cockroaches on people's floors, walls? You mean that horrible lavender plush was really nothing but ground-up cockroaches?
Quite possibly. Of course, they would have dyed them. That's why they're white, I'm sure. And they may have added other materials.
Cecilia stepped back.
I have never imagined anything so disgusting.
Harris grinned at Petrus.
There is something worse.
What?
When they're loose and you haven't noticed them in the sheets.
It's not funny. Or, I suppose it is, but... Oh my! Have we got an upper hand here?
That's what I thought. Of course, we're now in violation of half a dozen regulations ourselves, but we've been careful. I would prefer, however, that Commander Levati's people not know about the live ones.
Oh, absolutely. But I suspect that restocking my solarium with miniatures will be well within my budget.
From that beginning, the trip back to Rockhouse Major went smoothly. Harris made the rendezvous with Lavati's Marlene Scolare, and his pinnace picked up the medical teams. Harris had braced herself for questions about the clones, but the medical teams were so excited about the new technologies they'd discovered in those few days on the station that they could talk of nothing else. Lavati asked, of course. Harris was glad she and Cecilia had worked out an answer that was not exactly a lie.
I left the clones behind. Neither of them was the prince. As you know, one was killed in the shooting, and tissue analysis at autopsy could neither prove nor disprove that that one was the prince. Perhaps post-mortem degradation...
Or perhaps he's off in a bar somewhere making an idiot of himself. I wonder if the king knows how many doubles he had.
We may never know. What's the latest on the uproar?
Not quite civil war. Fleet's on standby, all the family delegates are gathering for an emergency session, and rumor has it the king is considering abdication. The benignity has filed complaints and threatens to take action if we don't pay reparations for their two cruisers, which have somehow grown to dreadnoughts. Athar's world decided that this was a great time to try a little piracy. Oh, yes, and the station master at Rotterdam says to tell Lady Cecilia that the Black Mare has foaled. Anything else?
No, thank you. What about the fleet and us?
You personally, or you and Lady Cecilia's yacht?
Either or both.
Well, I've had strong representations from senior familias that my neck is in the noose if Lady Cecilia doesn't get back safely. How is she, by the way?
Quite able to take up her duties.
Good. And I've had strong pressure from some elements in the fleet that your permanent disappearance would just about guarantee my first star. While others say the opposite. I would suggest the fastest possible course, and I suggest you allow me to escort you in.
I accept both suggestions.
Harris was not entirely sure of him in all respects, but if he wanted her dead, it would have been easy enough to leave her in compassionate hand space without help. The Familius Grand Council met in a domed hall. High above, painted stars on pale blue echoed the carpet of deep blue patterned with gold stars. Each family had its table. Each voting member had his or her chair. On the north wall, opposite the entrance doors, the speaker's bench had become the king's throne, and the king, wearing his usual black suit, sat there behind a desk with its crystal pitcher of water, its goblets, its display screens, and the gold-rimmed gavel. For an hour now, the members had streamed in past uniformed guards and weapons checks and more guards and more weapons checks. The lines extended across the lobby, out the tall front doors, down the steps, to the sidewalk, where yet more limousines disgorged yet more members. A light rain brushed the steps with one slick layer after another, and those who had not expected a wait got damp and grumpy. Cecilia watched her sister and brother-in-law climb up the steps. She, Harris, Mahari, and Janice were part of a thin crowd held back by a chain attached to a movable post. From the chain, a little tin sign dangled with the words, "Members only past this point." Across from them, on the far side of the entrance steps, another such chain restrained another small clump of observers.
When are you going?
After Lorenza. I want to be sure she's here.
What if she doesn't attend?
Oh, she will. She may not take her own chair, but she always attends her brother. There. That's theirs.
Cecilia started to look down, then remembered she didn't look anything like the Cecilia Lorenzo would recognize. They had docked the yacht over on Rockhouse Minor, where Bunny's shuttle retrieved them. There would have been gossip, of course, but Livati, at Harris's suggestion, had docked at the fleet terminal at Rockhouse Major and complained loudly to his fellow officers that bitch Serrano had disappeared again. Cecilia watched as the portly crown minister climbed out and offered his arm to Lorenza. She, at least, had prepared for a wait in a pretty ice-blue raincoat. Piercy had an umbrella. Cecilia felt her lip curling.
If you can't stand a bit of rain, then carry a personal shield, not an ostentatious umbrella. That's carrying the fashion for antiquity too far.
Piercy held the umbrella over Lorenza's head. She looked out from under it with cat-like smugness. Cecilia realized she was trembling only when Harris touched her hand. Rage filled her. She could hear that voice whispering in her ear.
How did I not know who it was? How do I not leap over the chain and strangle that smug little trap?
Lorenza looked around as if for admiration. Cecilia stood straight, watching her. Their eyes met. Lorenza frowned a little, shook her head minutely, and went on up the steps to the tail of the line. Half a dozen more members got in line. Cecilia shifted her feet.
Let's go.
It's too close. She'll see you. She'll start trying to remember.
Let her!
Cecilia was shaking as if before a race. Harris gripped her hand.
Milady, we're with you. You have allies, you know that. Don't let her shake your resolution. Even if she does look like a drowned rat in that raincoat.
All right. But not much longer.
No, not much longer.
They waited until Lorenza and her brother were near the top of the steps, when the guards at the door recognized them and swept them inside ahead of the others.
Now.
They stepped around the barrier, and Cecilia clipped her member badge to her coat. The others put on the ID tags Bunny had arranged. Members could bring their personal assistants as long as none carried weapons. Harris wasn't worried. Mahari and Janice were weapons. Most of the delegates had arrived. The line moved faster. At the door, Cecilia moved into the members' booth for an ID check. The others, with staff IDs, went through without incident. Cecilia came out of the booth and found them waiting. She felt weak at the knees. She had been alone so long, and then with a few friends. And now, to face that crowd. She had always hated public speaking. She felt the others close in.
All right, milady?
All right. I'm fine. The line they were in snaked slowly forward. She could see in the door at last. It had been decades since she'd attended a grand council. When she'd been a young woman, first eligible for a chair, it had been a thrill, later a bore. Later, something she delegated to a proxy without a second thought. Now that earlier awe struck her again. That tall dome spangled with stars, those dark, polished tables, each with its chairs of red leather, all symbols of power that had kept her safe and wealthy all these years, and then had nearly killed her. Across the chamber, as she came to the door, she saw the king on his throne. He stared out, seeming to see no one. Her family table had moved since the last time she'd attended. Tables were drawn by lot every other council. Now it was midway down the right side of the left aisle, almost directly across from the speaker's table. A page led them to it and checked Cecilia's ID again before handing her to her chair. The chair itself required her to insert her member card. With the card in place, the screen before her lit. Only then did she look around. Her sister Berenice, two chairs down, stared at her, white-faced, then glanced at her companions and turned even whiter. Ronnie, at the foot of the table, started and then grinned happily. Gustav would be at his family's table. Cecilia had no idea where it was now.
Good to see you again.
They had not told Berenice. They had not told anyone. Berenice's shock was almost vengeance enough for her treatment of Harris.
You had...
Rejuve, yes, just as you did. Where's Abelard?
Probably having a last drink.
Abelard, their oldest surviving brother, always came late. Ronnie looked as if he were bursting with glee and news both. Cecilia gave him a look she hoped would quell him. They already knew what he knew. Bunny had told her. She looked around. Kevil Mahoney was in his chair, with George beside him. Bunny, his brothers, and his sons were already seated. Brunn, a year too young for her own chair, crouched beside her mother at another table. She was scanning the chamber, looking, and she saw Cecilia. A grin spread over her face. Cecilia gave a little nod. Now to find Lorenza. The crown ministers sat together at two tables to either side of the throne. But when she found Piercy, leaning back to hand a file to a page, she did not see Lorenza's gold head anywhere near. She let her eyes rove the chamber, but it was Mahari who spotted her. A nudge. Cecilia leaned over.
Top tier, near the right aisle.
Cecilia turned casually.
Yes,
The ice-blue raincoat had been slung carelessly over the back of a neighboring chair, unlike the precise Lorenza. But there she was, leaning over to talk to someone else Cecilia couldn't see.
Whose family is that? Not Lorenza's, certainly. Lorenza's mother was a Sturinskopf, and her aunt Lucrezia should be heading that table.
So she was, an upright old tyrant in black lace whom no amount of rejuvenation could soften.
Maybe it runs in the family.
So why was Lorenza back with the Buckley Van Dormers? True, people sometimes got permission to sit in other chairs, if they had physical problems, if they planned to leave early.
Ah, let her leave. Let her try to escape. It won't do her any good.
A few last members came scurrying in, swiping at their wet clothes. The king picked up the gavel. Grand Council was about to begin. The king had not recognized Lady Cecilia in the lithe redhead who stalked down the aisle as if she owned it. Not until she sat at that table, in that chair, not until her name lit on his screen of members present. Then, as if his vision had suddenly cleared, he recognized Harris Serrano with her. Where was the prince? Panic gripped him suddenly. Icy sweat broke out all over him. He felt himself trembling. If the prince were alive, she would have brought him. The conclusion was inescapable.
Dead.
He could see, as if part of his brain had turned into a tiny view screen, the concatenation of errors that had led him to this place. One after another, he had done the convenient thing, the expedient thing. He had let himself be led from one folly to the next. Jared's assassination, Nodril's duel, Gerald's drugs, the clones, the secrets and counter-secrets, the lies and evasions. He had lost his power. He had lost his sons. Worst of all, he had lost the respect of those two women and everyone like them, all the decent men and women in the realm. His former allies would certainly disown him and his policies now, even as they scrambled to save their influence. He had thought Cecilia immature, with her strong enthusiasms, her blunt honesty. Now that immaturity seemed far wiser than the sly counsels he'd convinced himself represented maturity. He wanted to break into tears. He wanted to throw his gavel down and leave. Tears would not help. He had nowhere to go. If Gerald had come back, he might have stood against the question already before the meeting, but no longer. He knew what he had to do. Lorenza could not shake the uneasiness that had become her constant companion. That stupid goon on Rockhouse Major had attacked the wrong girl and thereby raised suspicion. No one had seen Thornbuckle's daughter. No one had seen Lady Cecilia. Berenice had complained that Ronnie was spending all his time with his regiment. He had run out on the opera party over some ridiculous little chit of a girl, and now he never came home. She knew that George, too, had not been home for weeks. The men she hired could not locate them anywhere. Piercy had come home with vague stories of great unrest here and there. The Benignity was upset, Athar's world. She had tried to listen, but all she could think of was Lady Cecilia. Lady Cecilia awake, alert, able to walk and see and speak. Worst of all, Lady Cecilia able to remember. She wasn't supposed to be able to remember, but then she wasn't supposed to be able to achieve legal competency either. Lorenza found herself seeing Lady Cecilia everywhere when she went out.
It's just nerves. If she comes, then she comes. And then, kill her.
She'd begun carrying a weapon, a tiny thing that fired darts tipped with poison. Yet no sign of Lady Cecilia, the real Lady Cecilia, showed up before the Grand Council meeting. One informant tried to tell her that Lady Cecilia's yacht had come into Rockhouse Minor, but the database had an entirely different listing, and a more reliable source on Rockhouse Major reported a conversation between Arash Levadi and another RSS officer, one known to be hostile to Serrano. She had that recording.
It could be that Lady Cecilia's afraid to come. She and that renegade captain have gone off together somewhere.
She didn't believe that for a moment. She had dressed that morning as if for her last appearance. She had her jewel case hidden in her raincoat. She had her pearls under her dress. If she had to flee, if she couldn't use her credit cubes, she would have something. For a moment, just after getting out of the limousine, she had been sure Cecilia was near. She had looked around at the little clumps of people who wished they were rich enough to be Familius, to have chairs and votes. In the rain, it was hard to tell. One tall woman with red hair reminded her of Cecilia, but she was 40 years younger, at least. And she was prettier than Cecilia had ever been. Lorenza took precautions anyway. She would sit with the Buckley Van Dormers, to whom she was distantly related, claiming an upset stomach. She could leave quickly if she had to. She had a reservation on the noon shuttle to Rockhouse Major under another name, and she knew the number to call when she got there. They owed her plenty of favors. Even with all her caution, she did not see Lady Cecilia until the king struck for order with his gavel. Her eyes checked the tables. There was Piercy, looking stuffy. There was Abelard and Berenice and... the back of a red head, a tall woman. The woman turned and looked her in the eye and smiled, a slow smile of absolute delight. Lorenza almost fainted, her fists clenched on the table before her. Cecilia! The bitch was not only recovered but rejuvenated. And she remembered. She forgot the weapon she carried. She heard nothing the king was saying. In a scramble, she grabbed her raincoat and rushed the door, pushing past the row of pages. She shoved the tall door open and strode across the wide lobby, trying not to run. The guards, alert to stop intruders, did not move as she went out the glass doors of the building, down the rain-wet steps. She was on the street, drenched. Before she remembered, she was carrying a raincoat. She dragged it on over her wet dress and looked for the nearest transportation. Cecilia half rose when she saw Lorenza Bolt. Harris grabbed her wrist.
Not now. She won't escape.
Between Lavati and Bunny, Lorenza would find no transportation farther than the stations. If she bolted that far, they might find out who her allies were.
Right.
Esteemed members of the Crown Ministry, members of the Familiars in good standing, honored guests, I welcome you to this meeting of the Grand Council.
Bunny stood for recognition. He was very much Lord Thornbuckle in his formal suit.
If you'll wait a moment.
There is a question before the floor.
I know that, but I have a preemptive announcement.
May I request the floor when you have made it?
The king nodded. Bunny sat down stiffly.
Members of Familiars, I wish to announce my resignation. Abdication. I am not able to continue.
Why, we don't want that!
Yes, we do!
I cannot... I have reason to believe my last son is dead. In my grief, I am aware of failings that...
He laid the gavel down, shook his head, then put it down on his desk. Cecilia saw puzzlement, anger, and fear on the faces around her. Bunny stood again.
I was promised the floor to address the question, which all of you have been sent. The king has indeed preempted that question, which called for his resignation. I move we accept it without further inquiry.
How can we vote without a chair?
By putting your finger on the little button, the way you always do.
Cecilia pushed the voting button on her screen. Others followed. The vote carried. She felt a sudden burst of compassion for the king. Had he meant any of the harm he had brought to pass? Probably not. She had not meant him any harm either, but she had been the means of destroying his reign. The king, no longer the king, but a man whose familiar name nearly all had forgotten, sat immobile, staring at the desk in front of him. Cecilia watched the Crown Minister's head swaying from side to side as they whispered among themselves, exactly like pigeons on a roost. Finally, Bunny went to the minister's tables and leaned over to speak to them. One of them rose and approached the ex-king. He looked up then, and in his expression, Cecilia saw a new resolution form. He stood.
I yield the floor to Lord Thornbuckle.
He held out the gavel, and Bunny, grave, unsmiling, took the few steps necessary. The gavel passed between them, and Chemtree stepped down to meet Bunny on the level below the throne.
I'm going back for Velosia, if she waits. Then home. I'm sorry, Bunny. I hope you have better luck. At least this gives you a chance.
Then he came up the steps towards Cecilia. She felt Mahari and Harris tense on either side of her.
It's all right.
She might as well have tried to calm a pair of eager hounds with the game in view. If he meant her any harm, he was a dead man.
I'm sorry, Cecilia. I cannot say how happy I am to see you recovered. It was not my plan, but I'm sure it was, in some way, my fault. You did me a good service, and I did you a bad one.
Cecilia thought of the suffering of the months, almost 2 years in local time, and gave him a stare that made him flush, then pale.
I can forgive you for myself, but the boys? I was never a mother, Chemtree, but I could not have done to anyone's child what you did to your own. How could you?
Before he could answer, her gaze swept the tables.
I don't blame you as much as Lorenza.
Below her, Piercy flinched.
She's the one who poisoned me. I dare say she's poisoned others. She's the one I want.
Lorenza's aunt Lucrezia gave Cecilia a glare that should have ignited asbestos at 100 paces.
Sir Kevil Mahoney, please come forward. The king has resigned. We need not fall into disorder for that, shareholders. We had a government before we had a king. We can have one now, with or without a king. Sir Mahoney has legal advice for us all. I ask your attention.
Chemtree looked past Cecilia to Harris. She shook her head, offering no details. All he really needed to know was in that negation. Chemtree seemed to sag on his bones and then turned away. Harris watched the former king climb slowly to the exit. No one greeted him. No one stretched out a hand to comfort him. She was not sure what she felt. She was only sure it was neither triumph nor pity. The meeting went on for hours, never quite erupting into complete disorder. Piercy resigned. 2 other crown ministers resigned. Cecilia's brother Abelard proposed a vote to restore the speaker's position. Cecilia had not imagined that he had that much initiative. The vote passed, which surprised her even more. She stayed, when she would rather have pursued Lorenza, caught up despite herself in the excitement, until at last the meeting adjourned for the day. She went home with Bunny, despite Berenice's plea. She wasn't ready to forgive Berenice yet. No one on the noon shuttle paid any attention to Lorenza. Their attention was on the news being shown on the forward view screen. The king's abdication, the surprise vote to abolish the monarchy and restore the speaker's position, was enough to hold even the most jaded. Lorenza ignored it. She was fingering the pearls hidden beneath her dress and wondering how far they would take her. Although the benignity owed her favors for her many useful acts, she had no illusions about them. They would do more for pearls or the other jewels than for old time's sake. She slipped into an uneasy doze, missing the interview with Lady Cecilia de Marctos, famous horsewoman and prominent member of her family, whose miraculous recovery from a coma provided the news program's obligatory good news spot. Rockhouse Major bubbled with rumors and excitement when she arrived. Lorenza put on her most demure expression and made her way to the office whose location she had long ago memorized but had never visited. A lady of her standing did not visit the kind of therapist employed to counsel criminals. Now she needed to contact the benignity's senior agent on the station. She did not like the tall, handsome, self-assured woman in the pale yellow silk suit. Liking didn't matter, of course, but she felt abraded by the woman's appraising eye, as if she could see through the rejuvenations to her real age, through her carefully groomed exterior to her inner self. She introduced herself with the code words she'd been given long ago.
Of course. We'll have to hide you until a suitable ship comes. Come with me, please. Do you have any luggage? Any... I presume you don't want to use your credit cubes. Anything to contribute towards expenses?
Only this.
Lorenza started to open the jewel case, but the woman took it from her, then smiled.
You needn't worry. The Benignity is scrupulously honest.
Lorenza had no time to think about the confiscation of the jewel case. She was being hurried through back passages, past little cubicles with chairs and mirrors in them, like changing rooms at dress shops. The woman held open a door at the end of the row.
This one. No one will bother you here. I'll get you something less conspicuous to wear. You might want to take off that raincoat. You must have been seen in it.
Under the raincoat, her dress was still damp from the rain.
Oh, get that wet thing off before you catch a chill. I'll get you a warm robe.
She went out, the raincoat over her arm. Lorenza looked at herself in the mirror. Damp, haggard, her gold hair rumpled to one side by that nap on the shuttle. Terrible. She raked at her hair with her fingers. A draft brushed her damp shoulder. She looked up and realized that the walls in this little cubicle went all the way to the ceiling. There shouldn't be any draft. But there was, with a whiff of something acrid in it. She grabbed the door handle. It came off in her hand, leaving a slick metal panel. The mirror. As she looked, the upper half blurred, no longer reflective. An image formed. The therapist, with a handful of Lorenza's jewels.
You ruined it, Lorenza. The Benignity is scrupulously honest, but it doesn't tolerate mistakes.
Please, I still have these.
She tore at her dress, pulling out the pearls. Their lustrous surface turned a dirty green. She could feel them crumbling.
Damn. You had pearls, too. That gas ruins pearls.
Harris had had no trouble getting an appointment with Space Enhance. At the moment, anything Lady Cecilia wanted was hers to command.
I'm terribly afraid we may have damaged some of your, property.
The senior partner looked as if something were crawling over his skin.
Yes?
Some, pets, I suppose.
Pets?
Yes. Unfortunately, they've been somewhat of an embarrassment to us. During a crisis, a medical team member spotted, well, let's just say evidence of their presence. They recommended we contact environmental control to fumigate the ship.
You told them?
No, I decided they represented no present hazard. We could dispose of them appropriately.
So they had. Sirkin, Brunn, Mahari, and Oblo had ensured a most unpleasant surprise for a certain therapist they blamed for Irulan's death. With any luck at all, the discovery of illegal biologicals in her possession would lead to full investigation of all her activities.
Ah, thank you, Captain.
No need. It would have benefited neither of us for environmental control to come down on you.
Harris smiled. From his expression, her smile was not reassuring. She didn't mean it to be.
Benefited?
Come now. It's clear to me what you do with those, insects. That is, I presume, an industrial secret of some worth to you. So the benefit to you of my silence is obvious. The benefit to me, you know, the ship still needs redecorating. The deposit paid to you has been earning you interest all this time. I think you owe me, and Lady Cecilia, a very fast, very special redecoration.
But Captain Serrano...
Very fast.
Harris opened her hand, where an egg case lay.
Don't you?
As planned before, or do you have something else in mind?
Harris handed him a data cube. She and Cecilia and the crew had discussed it.
Here are the specifications. Except for one thing.
She dropped the egg case on his desk.
This time, make sure you get all the bugs out.
The Serrano Legacy, Sporting Chance, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2002, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Lily Beacon, Terrence Aselford, M.B. Van Dorn, Andy Clements, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Ariane Parker, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Elizabeth Demery, Kate Torrey, Christopher Grayville, Richard Rowan, Karen Carbone, Dylan Lynch, Jeff Baker, Peter Stray, James Konacek, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for the Deathstalker series, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.